As an Amazon associate, we earn from qualifying purchases. This podcast is supported by its listeners. If you choose to purchase something using links on our website, we may earn a commission. No books were warped, dog-eared, underlined with purple pen, eaten, cursed, cancelled, burned, or otherwise harmed in the making of this podcast. I'm Tom Tolkien, and this is the School Reading List, a podcast that recommends books you'll want your children to read and books you'll wish you'd read as a child. And let's kick off this episode of the School Reading List podcast with a fulsome bag of children's literature book post. Let's start ripping. And first up is Human Kindness, True Stories of Compassion and Generosity That Changed the World by John Francis. And this one's from What on Earth Books. Exploring true stories of human kindness from around the world and throughout history, this is an uplifting illustrated non-fiction book. Including the story of Harriet Tubman, the Nomads Clinic, the Linda Linders, and more, themes of human rights, slavery, resilience, and making the world a better place are all explored. It's perfect for teachers who are setting expectations and encouraging positive behaviours. It's also ideal to read and discuss with children in Key Stage 2 at the start of the school year. And this next one is a paperback edition from Allen and Unwin. It's Iceberg by Claire Saxby. Experience the life of an iceberg during night and day, all four seasons, and through the eyes of creatures living above it, on it, and below it. This spectacular narrative non-fiction picture book includes an undersea fold-out panorama and lyrical text with rich figurative language and powerful verbs that will appeal to teachers in Key Stage 1 and Lower Key Stage 2. It's perfect to read and discuss in literacy lessons. Iceberg is also ideal to inspire topic work on Antarctica, climate change, and the ocean. And this next one is new from National Geographic Kids. It's Everything Sustainable Energy. Covering energy from the sky, energy from the ground, energy from the water, smart energy, and how energy relates to climate change, this bright and engaging non-fiction book couldn't be more relevant. There's a particularly impressive interactive section at the back of the book. With eye-catching photography and impressive detail, Everything Sustainable Energy is perfect for Key Stage 2 classrooms and libraries. And we have another one from Allen and Unwin, and this is on our bedtime stories list. It's Whisper on the Wind by Claire Saxby. This atmospheric and moving large format picture book blends evocative verse with spellbinding illustrations to enchant younger children. When the whisper from Wren's dream is plucked by the wind and carried through waves, moonlight, and oceans, it eventually reaches a distant sailor. In this story with powerful themes of separation and reunion, family and love. A wonderful and inspiring book to read and share with Key Stage 1 classes. Ooh. And from Faber Children's we have Bad Panda, The Cake Escape by Swapna Haddow. Lin the Panda is tough, fearless, full of badness and unafraid of humans, the perfect hero at hand when her best friend Fu goes missing from the zoo. With short chapters, fun-to-read-aloud words, well-spaced text and plenty of comic-style narrative illustrations, the Bad Panda series is perfect for children in years 2 to 4, starting to explore longer texts and chapter book series, and those children who are less confident readers in Key Stage 2. It's a hilarious read. Let's rip open some non-fiction. And this one is from Britannia Books. It's out in September and it's our non-fiction book of the month. Gross Factopia by Paige Towler. With an eye-catching cover resplendent in lurid yellow, featuring a hippo using its tail to fast-spin poo, this book will definitely grab children's attention in Key Stage 2 classrooms, covering, amongst other things, snot, vomit, worms, burping pee, rats, lice, zombies and armpits in 206 gross pages. This book is guaranteed to fascinate children and revolt their teachers. Spectacularly illustrated highlights include a close-up cockroach, vampire aphids, and a maggot world record. The latest title in the Factopia series is grossly recommended. And this hardback from Templar Books is our September picture book of the month. It's Found by Sam Usher. When Boy and his granddad set off for a day out on the beach, little can they imagine the spectacular adventure that awaits. A joyful seaside story that celebrates the bond between a grandson and his grandfather. With sandcastle building, a sailing rescue feat, and a satisfying twist, all conveyed through short bursts of text and watercolour illustrations, this is a beautiful book to read and share with young children. The fourth in a series, including Wild, Free and Lost, Found does not disappoint. Let's see what we can excavate from this parcel. It's Secrets of the Dead, Mummies and Other Human Remains from Around the World by Matt Ralphs. And this is out from Nosy Crow Books. Children will be engrossed by the fascinating illustrated insights into key scientific and historical discoveries such as Ötzi the Iceman, Tutankhamun, Franklin's Lost Expedition and Lady Xianzhu. Secrets of the Dead is a large format hardback covered with gold lettering and glowing hieroglyphs that looks at how civilizations throughout the ages have treated and preserved their ancestors. With detailed and precise text, this non-fiction book, written in association with the British Museum, is perfect for Key Stage 2 libraries and classrooms. Highly recommended. And next up is a new title from Usborne Books. Big Questions About the Universe by Alice James and Alex Firth. When experts at London's Royal Observatory collected the most interesting big questions children had asked, topics included the solar system, how stars were formed, how people can live and travel in space, and how much we know about our existence and the universe. This book helps to answer these questions and more in a brightly illustrated hardback that's jam-packed with short bursts of facts, details, and ideas to spark the imagination. Refreshingly ambitious and not dumbed down in any way, Big Questions About the Universe is highly recommended for Key Stage 2 libraries and extension reading for greater depth students. And next from Gecko Press, we have Lionel Poops by Eric Veillet. Lionel poops in all sorts of places that he shouldn't, all told through a fun call-and-respond format for shared reading. There's a reassuring and confidence-building twist at the end of the story. Also in the series is Lionel Eats, a laugh-out-loud examination of Lionel's mealtime adventures in a high chair. With bright colours, bold illustrations and a sturdy board book format, this is a funny and practical series to read and share with toddlers. And this one is from Piku Publishing. It's Old Oak and Little Acorn by Elena Mannion. Little Acorn clings to Old Oak, not wanting to leave the tree he thinks of as his father. But one day a gust of wind carries Little Acorn into a new world of squirrels, hedgerows, moles, new life and the future of the countryside. Old Oak and Little Acorn is a beautiful picture book to read to EYFS, a large format hardback with evocative double-page illustrations by Erin Brown. It's a great resource to read and discuss in forest schools and outdoor classrooms. A wonderful companion story to The Happy Hedgerow. And this paperback from Piccadilly Press features in our September book club list. The Last Storyteller by Donna Barber Higuera. Petra awakes after hundreds of years to find herself on a distant planet, one of the few emigrant survivors from the long-ago doomed planet Earth. She's also the only person to remember stories of their past world, and the only person who can tell them. A sweeping and epic vista of a novel that blends history, science, traditional Mexican tales, and philosophy, this middle grade novel is a tour de force for 9 to 12 year olds. The thought-provoking premise will fire children's imaginations, and it's a perfect starting point for book club discussions. And for English teachers, if you need a good example of a first-person narrated novel in the present tense, this is a compelling choice. And let's rip open some recyclable eco-packaging. And here we have The Cats Who Wanted More by Katie Sahota and Naomi Tipping. And this one's out from Owlet Press this month. When a group of cats hatch a plan to hoard all the food when the humans are inside at home, they didn't anticipate a rodent revolt. Rats and mice join forces to take down the lying fat cats in this refreshingly satisfying and loosely veiled allegory. A fun story to read to children in EYFS and Key Stage 1, this is also an interesting text to analyse and discuss themes of panic buying, hoarding, greed and manipulation with older children in Key Stage 2 and Key Stage 3, Philosophy for Education lessons. It's highly recommended. And from Chicken House, we have this book which features on our September book club list. It's The Spell Tailors by James Nicol. Hen wants to follow his nana and become a traditional spell tailor, but his dreams are threatened by machines, factories, and a downturn until Hen discovers an incredibly powerful and dangerous magic stitch. Eye-catching and presented as an alluring flapped paperback with glowing metallic titling, The Spell Tailors is an extraordinary and inventive middle-grade fantasy novel. Children will never look at sewing stitches the same way again. A cracking mystery story, we highly recommend this for readers in Key Stage 2. And finally, in our book pile for this month, we have from Scallywag Press, Granny Pip Grows Fruit by Deborah Chancellor and Julia Groves. Readers are treated to a little girl's awe and wonder, planting, feeding, and harvesting food to eat with her green-fingered grandma in this charming and informative picture book. With bright and exciting illustrations, each spread informs and advises children on how to grow and how to look after a garden. A worthwhile resource for EYFS and Key Stage 1, non-fiction libraries and classrooms, there are also free teaching resources available from the publisher's website. Thank you to all the publishers and publicists for sending us books to review here on this podcast and on our website, schoolreadinglist.co.uk. Here's our rundown of great new children's and young adult books hitting the bookshelves this September. How to Survive Anywhere by Ben Lerwill. Big Questions About the Universe by Alice James and Alex Frith. Iceberg by Claire Saxby. Last Storyteller by Donna Barber Higuera. Stories of Peace and Kindness for a Better World by Elizabeth Laird. Granny Pip Grows Fruit by Deborah Chancellor and Julia Groves. Gross Factopia by Paige Towler. Eco Girl by Ken Wilson Max. Human Kindness by John Francis. The Curse of the Tomb Robbers by Andy Seed. Stone by Finbar Hawkins. Everything Sustainable Energy by National Geographic Kids. The Spell Tailors by James Nichol. Found by Sam Usher. Unraveler by Francis Harding. The Tree Keepers by Kieran Larwood. No Place for Monsters by Corey Merritt. Tom Gates, 19 Random Acts of Fun by Liz Pitchen. And Everything Will Be Glad to See You by Ella Risbridger. Everything Human Body by National Geographic Kids. The Cats Who Wanted More by Katie Sahota. Secrets of the Dead by Matt Ralphs. Which Way to Anywhere by Cressida Cowell. The Elemental Detectives by Patrice Lawrence. The Baddies by Julia Donaldson. Joyful, Joyful by Dapo Adeola. Old Oak and Little Acorn by Elena Mannion. Dogs of the Deadlands by Anthony McGowan. The Collectors by Philip Pullman. And our picture book of the month is Found by Sam Usher. Our non-fiction book of the month is Gross Factopia by Paige Towler. And our fiction book of the month is Stone by Finbar Hawkins. Bookity book, let's get reading. If you're a teacher, librarian, or avid bookworm who loves children's or YA books, and you'd like to review brand new titles for the school reading list, get in touch by email. We'd love to hear from you. The address is reviews@schoolreadinglist.co.uk. And now, we've reached that part of the show where I step back in time and look at an author from the past whose books are still relevant today. Often these might be books that are already in your school library, on bookshelves at home, or widely available and affordable second-hand. In this episode, I will be looking at an author who wrote every day until her final day, despite pain and disability, to create absorbing visits to the past, atmospheric revitalizations of traditional tales, and gripping recounts of long-forgotten events, spanning the Roman conquest through to the medieval period. This month I'm checking into a realm of historical fiction, myths, and legends. Let's time travel back into a world of second-hand books. Born in 1920, Rosemary Sutcliffe wrote over 40 books for children and young adults over a 42-year period, stretching from 1950 until she died in 1992. Her books remain widely respected for their historical detail, accuracy, and pathos, and The Lantern Bearers was awarded the Carnegie Medal in 1959. In her own words, she wrote, "For children of all ages, from 9 to 90. I'd like to highlight two of her books that remain highly relevant to secondary pupils today. The Eagle of the Ninth, which features on our Year 7 books list, was first released in 1954 and remains in print to this day. It follows young Roman officer Marcus as he travels undercover to the far north, over Hadrian's Wall, to search for his father and solve the mystery behind the missing 9th Legion. Epic in scale, there are 7 sequels, the novels cover themes of slavery, the supernatural, farming, political and social unrest, and the importance of respecting cultural differences. The sequence of stories shows how people lived and worked together in different times and situations, and how lives were impacted by class, power, religion, and an often hijacked and manipulated fear of the unknown. With an impressive focus on social history, storytelling, and class structure, they provide an empathetic glimpse into past lives and add colour to periods of history still dominated by a dry diet of dates and events in school teaching. Night's Fee is a particularly interesting short novel that will appeal to students in Years 7 and 8 learning about post-1066 medieval history. Published in 1960, this compelling drama weaves intrigue and military battles and is set in a class-riven feudal society. It brings life and empathy to manorial society, the farming rural economy, and the concepts of service, sacrifice, and medieval retinue. It follows Randall, the orphan child of a Saxon mother and a conquering Breton soldier. He's taken in by the Lord of the Manor and lives as part of the local nobility until conflict breaks out and pits one half of the family against the other in battle. Rosemary Sutcliffe's novels are perfect for younger readers who don't simply want to read about history, but need to become fully immersed in it. Immersed in the conversations, the landscapes, and the almost multimedia descriptions of contemporary life, Sutcliffe writes with passion and conviction, and with an authority derived from scrupulous research and a meticulous eye for detail. Her writing isn't historical impressionism, it's closer to a literary camera obscura. Readers are aware they have been taken back into the depths of time, but only just, such as the realism. So that's our blast of the past for this month. Seek out and find Rosemary Sutcliffe in your school library or secondhand bookshops. There's been a lot of discussion on social media this month about secondary schools, transition, and progress in reading from Year 7 onwards. Some suggest progress declines after primary school. Some even suggest it can regress by the end of GCSEs. But is there enough evidence to make a judgment? And are we, as educators, looking in the right places? Less confident children placed in a new and unfamiliar setting tend to revert to what they're familiar with. That comfort zone might be reverting to printed handwriting in Year 7, over-reliance on teachers or parents to remind them to bring pens, books, bags, etc., and, when given freedom of choice, picking books that they've already read. Key Stage 2 reading is often highly monitored. Children's book choices are recorded, the number of pages they read each day is noted, Parents are encouraged to sign logs, and teachers keep track of Lexile scores and how many genres have been covered. There are schemes, programs, systems, theories, training, consultants, and mystical gurus on hand to ensure reading is delivered. Then the children arrive at the big school. Key Stage 3 can be wonderful, with sparkly-eyed librarians to encourage and enchant like a literary magician fanning a pack of perfect book choices. For the majority, though, while there may be more books, there's something of a blank page syndrome. Year 7s file in, marshalled by the fifth in department teacher who'd rather be wowing an A-level crowd, and it's, here's the library. We have 5,000 books. Choose one. Any one. 5 minutes, go. Now. And after a silent movie scene to rival Harold Lloyd, the most important thing, don't lose the book. And bring it back this time next week. And now you shall read. While there's often choice, is there any real guidance? Here's the library, read what you like, isn't it wonderful? It's a nice idea, but it can be hugely off-putting for the less confident students. The choice and the pressure to choose quickly can be paralysing for reluctant readers, who will often opt for the something, for the anything that's familiar. Over and over, we see a repetitious diet of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roald Dahl, and David Walliams, even into Year 9. And then in Years 10 and 11, the main meal is the compulsory Shakespeare, with a side of Inspector Calls and Frankenstein, splashed with an insipid gravy of unloved poems. Well-stocked secondary school libraries are no use without an experienced librarian and timetabled time to deliver that experience. It's about time big school libraries and big school exams were at least a la carte with their reading menus. And I'm not one of those teachers who believes that the library should be a sacrosanct space. It should be a space that promotes reading and books. It should also expose students to books in any way possible. You don't have to use your library for packed lunches, queuing for home time or martial arts sessions, although even then the children would at least see a book every day. But if you have quieter extracurricular activities that happen to involve children who are reluctant readers, whether it's Dungeons and Dragons, a wargaming activity or filmmaking, why not subliminally expose them to books by running that club in the school library? All of this is assuming that reading is in fact declining, but is that a given? How do we measure reading? Is the decline real, fair, or just perception? Teens read to find things out, to experience their world, to keep in the loop. The internet, magazines, narrative poetry, including drill, songs, raps, and spoken word, ebooks, podcasts, graphic novels, texts, social media, and mobile apps are their everyday literary canon. Just ask them to analyse those texts. You will be surprised. To illustrate, graphic novels are booming according to the Bookseller magazine. They dominate the YA charts at the moment. We've also seen this on our website. We have two pages of graphic novels on the site, one for Key Stage 2 and one for Key Stages 3 and 4, and we're developing more as I speak. So, to prove a reading decline or not, there's nothing out there yet that measures words read per day in the same way that you can measure steps taken or breaths inhaled per day. Until there is, it's arguable that the evidence for a decline isn't there. Also, is ensuring development in reading ability and fluency driven by the amount we read, the reading age of the material, or the quality of the text? When we consider children's reading development, we must also consider what the purpose of the reading is. What is the end goal? Are we promoting reading for pleasure? Are we looking to create critical readers? Are we teaching reading skills for the workplace? Are these purposes linked or are they mutually exclusive? Context and motivation are important to assess the impact of reading in Key Stage 3 and Key Stage 4. It's not just reading for pleasure, but reading for a purpose, and that purpose needs to be abundantly clear. For example, teaching and interpreting the trial scenes in Merchants of Venice. Often pupils would ask, what is the point? Why are we doing this? I used to employ hot-seating discussion and debates, and however exciting the teaching delivery, it didn't fully engage until I took a week's lessons to enact two mock trials. If you want some ready-made resources, there are some great resources on the Young Citizens website and Smart Law, and these are in the programme notes. One mock trial was contemporary, about a street mugging, and the other superimposed the Merchants of Venice trial onto a Crown Court trial format. Then the students were more engaged. Similarly, when one student told me that all they wanted to be was a professional footballer, so why did they have to complete a line-by-line poetry analysis exercise, I pointed out that this analysis was a useful skill. Later that week, we took 30 minutes as a class to analyse part of a sample football player's contract of employment, helpfully provided by the PFA. We analysed it line by line, using the same analytical skills. The engagement was far better after that. One teacher recently messaged us and said of her students, they'd read a book for GCSE if it was Colleen Hoover, Alice Oseman or Karen McManus. So why not study more modern and widely popular authors? Wasn't Shakespeare a verified blue-tick Elizabethan-era influencer? Who's trending today? Studying a bestseller would at least show students how to write for an audience. And why limit literature studies to mainly books and plays? Why not study the power of advertising, propaganda, and political speeches in a variety of media, text, film, and script? It's worth remembering that Ridley Scott honed his skills on adverts before picking up Academy Awards, and Salman Rushdie developed one-line zingers for ad men before collecting a Booker Prize. Who's to say Colleen Hoover won't be anthologised in future generations, as the last gasp of viral internet age pre-apocalyptic American prose? See, there's even a deep and meaningful genre to keep the exam board happy. Is it enough to determine a teen's reading development by what they are, or are not, reading? Shouldn't we also be asking what students are reading and why, before focusing on why they're not reading what the qualified educators are asking them to? Consider this. If reading is declining in 11-year-olds and upwards, what effects would we as teachers expect to see? In schools, surely we'd expect to see a growing inability to access progressively more complex exam questions in all subject areas. But we'd also expect to see an inability to formulate complex internet search queries to find out and discern information. We'd also expect to see difficulties when reading and making decisions about nuance, tone, and the veracity of text on social media, and deciding how to respond to it. While there may well be evidence of a decline in comprehension skills in school, I wonder if teenagers today are more equipped and adept than adults when critically analysing social media. Perhaps educators should reflect more on their childhoods. How many of today's educators lapped up their parents' choices of music, clothes, or books? I sometimes wonder why we still ask and demand that teens read dry textbooks, repetitive revision guides, and novels that were already a generation old for their grandparents. Put it this way, as a teacher, would you binge on black and white movies in your downtime, rave to a banging Charleston on a Friday night after work, or curl up with a vintage Reader's Digest bound in fake crimson pigskin. Reading should be enjoyable and spark the imagination. No writer wants to send their readers to sleep. Publishers aren't part of a clandestine plot to sabotage future book sales. So why is the teaching establishment still obsessed with books that turn the next generation off literature? And perhaps that's a more plausible crux to any apparent decline in reading among secondary age students. A week or so ago, I posed the question as a Twitter poll. Let's knock on the staff room door of Twitter to find out what the verdict was.
What is it? What do you want?
Do you think children's reading declines in Key Stage 3 and Key Stage 4? And there we have it. And the results were 35.3% said no, and 64.7% said yes. If you'd like to get in touch, use the hashtag SRLPodcast on Twitter, or drop us a line using the contact form or messaging button on our website schoolreadinglist.co.uk. And all the books lived happily ever after. The end.